Well, hi, welcome to the Christian Contrast, where we talk about how walking with Jesus leads us to live differently than those in the world around us. And I'm very excited to be joined by the chair of our elder team here at LBF Church, Lauren Van Woudenberg. Thanks so much for coming and being part of this discussion.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, so this is the fourth episode of four. So this is the final one that we're talking about. And what these episodes have been about is what it means to belong to a church. So we did an episode about what it means to worship and to gather together regularly like we do on Sundays. We talked about belonging through groups and through small groups and Bible studies and being a part of fellowship. In the last episode, we talked about serving. And in this episode, we're talking about giving.
Yes.
So here's the funny thing. And we were just talking about how we're going to start this. Of the four, this is probably in some ways the hardest one to be excited about. You know, with serving, with gathering, with friends that you have good fellowship with worshiping together, it might be easier for us to access how that could be a joyful event. With giving, that's a little bit more challenging for us. And so here's where we wanted to start. Instead of starting by saying, what are all the negative feelings that we have to overcome, we will get to that. We want to start with the joy, with the idea that as human beings and as believers in Jesus, in many ways, we're chasing the joy that God has for us as we walk with Him. So, Lauren, we'll both share about this, but have there been some times that practicing generosity and giving has been a joyful experience for you?
Yes. As I think about it, it kind of reminds me of Christmas, the joy of a parent giving a present that you've went out and purchased or had it delivered to home, and then watching the face of the kids that have given it or their grandkids. To me, that's been the joy of being generous and working through that, that, wow, this is like dealing with selfishness and I get to be unselfish. The excitement of blessing. I think that word is really important, that I get the chance to bless God's kingdom and God's church with being able to give and be generous. To me, it's a lot like a fist. If I clench it like this, it's not very comfortable. And this is the typical pattern for many of us, and it's a pattern I had to work through. The whole idea of opening my hand to me is like giving, and the joy that that brings being able to do that. And I think the joy also is, I think in Luke chapter 6, it's more blessed to give than to receive. I think most of us would nod our head and say, yeah, and we might say, but to actually be generous and be a giver really, really is a blessing. And I think the idea is, can I be a blessing, or I've been blessed, can I be a blessing to bless others?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that is, the Christmas analogy is so good, because if you're a parent, you felt, even if you're not a parent, at some point you've experienced where as the giver, you've been more excited than even the recipient. You're like, I can't wait till they open this.
Right.
I can't wait. And I just think, for me, one of my favorite memories of our church, and Karina and I got to be a part of this through being a part of the giving for this, but was several times we have done special offerings for the Ilchamus people in Kenya, where we were sponsoring scripture translation for them getting the Bible in their own native, like, mother tongue. And I just remember the first time we laid it out, we were able to lay it out really creatively, where we were sponsoring the book of Hebrews and James, and we determined this is how much, or the seed company had determined this is how much money they need for those books to be translated. And so we had all over our lobby the different verses lined out of Hebrews and James, and we determined this is how much money it is to sponsor one verse. And so people were going out and they were choosing sometimes their favorite, Hebrews 11:6, that's the one I want to get sponsored. We did that. Our plan was to do that over the course of 2 weeks to raise the money. I think it was like 18 or 19,000. I might be remembering wrong because it was a while ago. By the time third service had rolled around, we were basically already done with raising the money for it. Wow. People had really given, to the point that, as often happens with churches, there were some people who were missing that week, and they showed up the second week that we had planned to also do this, and they were mad. Because they wanted it. They were like, no, what can I still give? I don't want to miss out on this. Sure. And I loved that idea of saying, don't rob me of getting to be a part of something. And then for me, one of the really powerful things is that A little while after we did this, after we had really been able to give generously and partner with the El Chamus people, Troy Spillman and I got to go over there, and we got to visit some missionaries in Kenya and also visit the translation team in some of the villages of the El Chamus people, and getting to see. I think that's one of the challenges sometimes with giving to a church. You don't always see directly the impact of the funds, but getting to go there and see the faces of the people and getting to pray over the village, to me, was so powerful to see the connection and the gospel impact that our giving can have.
I was on campus last night, and I think the idea of giving and the joy that it brings, watching them load up the bus and realizing we're sponsoring kids to go to Central America. And early this morning, they got on an airplane. The joy that that brings to say, I'm a part of that, and to see the excitement of the kids and when they come back. And so, like you said, if I'm not a part of that, it really robs the idea of a smile across your face when you're going, wow, we are partnering with somebody in doing this. And so the idea of I can give to a church that also then sponsors sending teenagers to Central America in an orphanage.
Yeah, what I loved, you used a couple really significant words there. Partnership, you just used. And I think maybe earlier you said something about sharing. A word that, for some of us that have been around church for a while, there are certain Greek words that you get to know. And one of the words that a lot of us have heard is the word koinonia, which is typically translated as fellowship, and kind of describes the togetherness and the camaraderie that believers have with each other. But there are times in the New Testament that the word for fellowship is used in a context that clearly is indicating financial giving.
Wow.
And so it's cool because there's this idea that partnership is sometimes how it's translated, sharing is sometimes how it's translated, but just that there's such a deep connection between our affection and love for each other and the idea that giving would be a part of how that would show up. Just in the same way that with the early church in Acts, they have this sense of, we're all in this together. If you have a need, what's mine is yours. Right. And just that sharing and that togetherness overflows and impacts our finances. Now, we both know this. There are people who are not believers in Jesus who still sort of catch what we're talking about in a very broad sense, maybe in a common grace sense, that they recognize that there's joy to be had in giving. So let's even narrow it. And as believers in Jesus, so for you, Lauren, specifically in your relationship, in your connection of loving Jesus and walking with them, how has that impacted how you've approached giving?
It was a process. I would go back to my hand. I had the idea that this is all mine, and Jesus is in the business of transformation. And so he slowly but surely began to transform the idea. My good friend gave me a word, stewardship, and he defined it for me. God-given resources, my time, my treasure, my talents, used in a God-given way. And that really stuck with me. And so Jesus began to take that definition and say, this is the issue. Are you a steward of what I've given to you? And then to realize investing in things that will outlast me was far more important than investing in the stuff that was so important, it seemed at the time, around me. So the beauty of that was the transformation that Jesus brings. For some of us, it happens like that. For others, it's a process of beginning to understand that Jesus is in the business of changing me from the inside out. If it was just the outside, I might be generous once and not again, but the idea that he is just transforming me this. And I think the other thing, I mentioned it earlier, the idea of translating and really saying, I'm going to invest in things that are eternal. I'm going to invest in things that will live long beyond me. Instead of just the stuff, and we take care of ourselves, but the idea of I'm going to just invest in these things that are going to be eternal and last forever. And to me, the beauty of that is a local church where I can invest in.
Yeah, and we'll dig in more to that in a minute. But yeah, I think so much of what you're saying resonates with me also, and just even with the fist and the open hand kind of analogy that you're using, I think of. There's the verse, and I should have looked it up beforehand, but the verse in Ecclesiastes where it talks about the idea that the riches of a person permit them no sleep. And just that idea that when you have a lot of money and a lot of possessions, you're constantly thinking about them. Like it might feel like a funny analogy, but I remember when I was getting ready to propose to Karina, and I had the ring, not for long beforehand, but I mean, at least probably for 2 to 3 weeks in my sock drawer. And man, when I was around my apartment, probably 5 to 6 times a day, I just made sure it was still there. Just checking, it's still there. The night that I proposed to Karina, it was in my pocket. And man, my hand was at that pocket the entire night. And once I gave it to her, of course, I was most excited about giving her the ring and being engaged to her and looking forward to being married. But also, it's funny because there was this relief of, I no longer have it. It's now where it's supposed to be. And thinking about the idea with Jesus, I think for me, Matthew 6, where Jesus talks about giving, praying, and fasting, he talks about all of those as acts of righteousness. And what he calls us to do, and this can be a misunderstood passage, what he's not saying is you never pray in public, you never fast in a group setting, and you never give in a way that people might be aware that you're giving. But the big point that he's saying is you don't do these things in order to get a temporary reward from others. You do these to get an eternal reward from your Father in heaven. And so looking at Jesus and saying, I can trust that anything I lose, kind of short-term loss, any short-term losses I incur by faith in him, his reward will be greater than anything that I could have got through that. You know, any new toy, any sense of temporal security, any fun event, it's always going to be greater. And, you know, 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 is one of the classic giving passages in the New Testament. Paul talks about the idea that if you sow, he uses sowing and reaping. If you sow sparingly, you'll reap sparingly. And I used to play a lot of, you know, very low stakes poker with a bunch of friends. We'd get together and do that. And one of my friends was famous for always saying, bet small, win small. And he would always make fun of any of us who were too cautious, where he'd see the hand and be like, you should have bet big. You would have had a much bigger income if you would have, but you bet small, you win small. And man, I just think, and certainly it's still true of me too many times, how many of us as believers were like, we're betting on Jesus, but betting small. We're like, I'll do a little bit just to say that I've done it, instead of betting big on Jesus, that his reward will be greater.
I think part of the transformation for me was also Ecclesiastes, where probably richer than Elon Musk was Solomon. He had everything, and he, I don't know if he wrote the song or Kansas did, Dust in the Wind, and the whole idea that it was all vanity. So here's a guy that experienced every pleasure known to man, and he realized this stuff really doesn't matter, that it's okay to have, but it really doesn't matter. And so that's the transformation of going, and then the whole idea of what's my need and what's my greed, and wrestling with that. Jesus brings the transformation of helping you be satisfied and not always have to go one more model. I realized a long time ago with phones and computers, I'd never be satisfied. There's a new model out, and when can I learn just to be satisfied? Yeah. And so that's the transformation I see take place as well.
Yeah, and that really does. The word contentment was just coming to my mind as you were talking about that. When we have that contentment in Jesus, there is so much more of an openness. And again, even the idea of saying, if I'm giving this away, maybe part of the joy, I don't think it's the whole joy, but part of the joy is even the relief of saying, it's out of my hands to worry about. It's in the hands of, I mean, in a broad sense, we'd say in the hands of Jesus, because I've given it, I'm no longer in control of it, which even leads in maybe a little bit to what we'll talk about here in this next question. So, all right, if we're talking about this is giving and practicing generosity and looking to have gospel-led generosity is a form of us chasing the joy that God has made us for and living fully into that. What are some principles that have guided? Let's get a little bit nitty-gritty. We're not necessarily going to break out our budgets and itemize them, but what are some practical ways that you have looked to set principles in motion to guide you in how you've practiced this?
Right. I had the advantage of having parents that put 3 tin cans already in elementary school in my bedroom. And whether it be a paper route or mowing lawns, then eventually, no work permits in those days. I worked a full-time job already starting in the summer as a seventh grade. And they labeled those, and one said God, and one said fun, and one said savings. And they didn't check whether I was dividing it equally, but they would ask me, are you being faithful to that? So I grew up with this idea that God was always going to be a part of the budget. Even though I was buying baseball cards and gum.
Nothing wrong with
that. Right, and all the fun money.
Yeah, by the way, gum that you would snap in half.
Yes, it was a little sheet of bubblegum paper.
That's right.
And the neat thing was they also taught me about savings and the beauty of compound interest. And that. So Diane and I really didn't practice that a whole lot. Here we are in our marriage and really involved in a church. And then I began to realize that what's the Old Testament standard? And then all the taxes that they have for the temple and all of those things. And then I read Matthew, where Jesus always raised the standard. You know, he said, adultery, if you look at it. And I'm going, okay, Lord, you are really, a principle we need to do is, let's have a budget that puts Jesus in first place, God in first place, let's save, and then every year, can we lessen what our budget is for our bills? So I grew up with 80-10-10, and now we're in the process of going, how can we live on less than 80 in our budget? So it really means you need to budget and know where it's going, and I want to have a budget that puts God first, and that's the whole issue of first fruits that I could maybe talk about later, but the principle of doing that. And just the idea of going, wow, I get to do this. And I get to increase what I'm doing. And then what Diane and I have practiced doing now for many years is we call it an offering. So we believe our main giving should be to the local church where we're fed, where I'm trained, where I'm fed, where I'm in a fellowship group of life. And so we want to finance that not only for ourselves, but for other people. And then we love when we have our heart pulled. Fellowship of Christian Athletes, a missionary here, a special offering here. We provide turkeys at the Thanksgiving time. And to us, that's even above and beyond. And if we handle our budget well, we can be generous with the offering as well. And so that has been a wonderful principle. And my wife's really good at going, in fact, I hope nobody keeps coming to our door because she just has a heart for everything and doing that. But having your budget in order and putting God first in that budget has really been a great principle. So we're at the process now of let's live on less than 80. Let's live on less than 80 so we can give more and more to our local church and we can give more and more for offering.
Yeah. No, that's great. And a lot of what you were sharing has been similar to what Karina and I have practiced. Just first of all, you know, a lot of people bring up the 10% figure. Right. Which is funny because people will kind of bicker about the Old Testament standard, but where the 10% comes in is, you know, people will say, well, there were two 10%s and then every 3 years 10%, but one of those 10% was sort of to the religious life of Israel, and so I think some people say, okay, that's an appropriate parallel. You know, at our church, we don't think that there is a compulsory 10%. You know, in fact, I was just having a conversation this last Sunday with a woman who was asking me about it and just kind of explaining to her where we're at, where we say, we don't think 10% is compulsory. But, you know, my father-in-law, Randy Alcorn, has written a lot about giving, and he said something similar to you, where he said, if the poorest Israelite under the old covenant was required to give 10%, then in the richest nation in the history of man, living under grace, do we feel good about giving less? And that to me is very compelling. Yes. I think I'm not okay with giving less. And so I do tend to, you know, part of my encouragement to people if they're not giving is just to say 1% is better than 0%. Like, don't get so hung up on 10% that you don't give. But from the beginning of our marriage, and even before Karina and I were married, I said, hey, 10% is going to be the minimum. And 10% is going to go, as you said, to my local church, because that is the fellowship that God has called me to at that time. There's a priority there. And then when we've given, as you said, to missionaries, to Assure Pregnancy Clinic, which is somewhere that we love, or just to other people, individuals that we might feel called to. You know, all right, that there's a woman, a single mom in our life group, and she doesn't have money to buy new clothes for her kids for the new school year. We're going to give, but we're not then with a calculator saying, well, then we're giving less on set. We say, no, we believe that that is just non-negotiable. And we've started with that. And I think one of the positives with that non-negotiable is that a lot of people look at their budget, and I'll talk more about the budget in our next question, but look at that and are trying to figure out ways to shoehorn in how can we do this? Where for us, if we started our budget and just said, hey, 10% non-negotiable, like that is going to the local church that God has called us to be a part of, it's amazing how you find ways to make it work.
Yes.
How you just say, when you say, well, this is just what we have, instead of treating it like, well, if at the end of the month we have whatever it's going to be, that $400, that $600, you know, whatever it might be, if we have that, we'll give it. To say, well, that's just, you know, that's first fruits. That goes to the Lord, that goes to the local church, and then everything else, we find a way to make it work. So for us, the 10% starting point is something that we've done from the beginning, and I've encouraged people to say, don't make it all or nothing, but I think it's a good thing to aspire to, and then even as you're talking about, to aspire beyond, and then also to prioritize the local church, because I think one of the problems that happens, even if somebody were to say, hey, I'm going to give 10% of my income, but I'm going to give some of it here, some of it there, some of it there, you know, that certainly is better than a lot of things. But for me, I think that there's something powerful in abdicating a level of control about exactly where the money goes. We all know if you're around church long enough, unfortunately, you've probably experienced some instance where there was some church member who was trying to leverage their giving to get what they wanted.
Right.
I think sometimes if we say, well, I want to give here, or I want to give here, I want to make sure, instead of saying, if I believe God has called me to this fellowship of believers, and if I trust the leaders enough that I'm a part of this church and I'm a member, I need to trust that this is where God has me. And I think that there's a level of relinquishing control, which sometimes is a hang up for us when we're giving, that we don't have control of those funds anymore.
You know, and the neat thing, Dan, with whatever percentage is, we have never done without. Mm. Without. I've done without greeds.
Yes.
But we have never, with a place to call a roof over our head, clothes to wear. And so we just believe God just blesses. Now, he might not triple your income, and it might not be that way, which is some false teaching. But we have had soup to eat. Mm-hmm. We've had clothes to put on when we have put in God first in our entire life, have never done without.
Yeah.
And there's been some challenges and some tough times, but God has always been faithful.
Yeah. Well, when I was thinking about this, you know, we're in the midst of this series through the book of Joshua right now on Sundays. And talk, you know, we're calling it trust walk, talking about that. You know, you can't grow in trusting God without taking risk, without the risk of faith, without stepping forward. And the way that our trust gets reinforced is when we see God come through when there's some level of uncertainty about him coming through. So I just think giving is such a practical way to practice that, to say, by giving this money and giving it up front, I'm trusting that God will take care of us and that I won't experience disaster because of this generosity. And we've experienced the same thing. We had some lean years, especially the early years in our marriage when I was a youth pastor or a college pastor and God was providing, but, you know, luxuries were, you know, I don't know, luxuries were like chicken strips at, you know, whatever. We weren't living in luxury, and not that we are now, but God always provided. God always took care of us. And our faith in him got increased because we saw him provide and not hang us out to dry.
Right.
When we walked in that. And this sort of leads us into the last question that I want us to talk about, which now, you know, we started with joy, now getting to the obstacles, saying, if we want that joy, if we want the joy and the freedom that comes through the generosity of how we give, what are some obstacles that maybe the two of us, but also maybe people watching or listening to this, are going to need to overcome to get to that joy?
I'm assuming many had to overcome what I had to overcome, and I call it the managership ownership issue. I thought I owned everything. And so why in the world would I want to give it to anybody what I own? And then I realized scripture began to teach that the Lord gives me a breath when I wake up in the morning. He allows me to play a little pickleball this morning. I can take steps with it. The air that I breathe, the ability to have talent to earn some kind of living. And so he settled in my life, you're just the manager. You're not the owner, and the freedom that that brings. And again, back to the fist, if I'm the owner, I'm holding on to it tight. And then he realized, by the way, he says, faithful with little to given much. And I can tell you, I'm not overly rich, but again, he's provided help with college finances for the kids. And the whole idea, Lord, I'm going to give this up. I am just managing your finances, your time, my talent. And you're the owner of this. Direct me how you want to do that. And I think the other issue, and you mentioned the word earlier, first fruits. Farmers in the biblical times and all of that, and I know believer farmers set aside their first part of their crop. So if you have a seasonal crop that comes up first and the other ones come later, guess what the Lord gets? Because he's the owner, allows you to even have the breath to work. So this whole first fruits issue is so big with me. Of going, Lord, you get the first part of what I earn, not the last part. And hopefully we'll have some leftovers in doing that. And I think fear. What if?
Absolutely.
What if? And so that's where managing your budget becomes so important, that you're handling the what ifs. And you're spending a couple years of having a fund that can handle the things you never planned for in doing that. And so just overcoming. And I think what God says, fear not, because I'm with you. I counted once that 365 times, it probably is wrong, that he says some kind of issue of fear in our lives. And he says, fear not, because I am with you. So to me, manager ownership, fear, and the whole idea of first fruits are some obstacles that I've had to overcome. And maybe our people watching this can relate to that.
For sure. Yeah. And my thoughts were similar, where, you know, kind of one more of a heart issue and one more of a practical issue, but just getting into the trust area. You know, when you talk about fear, I agree with you. I think for most of us and for most people that I talk to, in some ways, that's what comes to the forefront as an obstacle. But will I be okay? Will I be able, what if financial disaster happens? You know, that there are, and 2 Corinthians, I think it's chapter 9, verse 8, is where Paul says, you know, and God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all that you need, you can abound with generosity and grace to others. And so the idea, as he's talking, it's right after he says, you know, if you sow sparingly, you reap sparingly. If you sow bountifully, you reap bountifully. And then immediately he says, and God is able. Just like, guys, as you're thinking about that and you're like, I'm going to go all in, I'm going to push all my chips in with God or a whole bunch of my chips. He says, hey, God is able. He can take care of you. And so I think there is, you know, for me, this isn't just with giving, this is with overall acts, with faith, a constant thing that I'm asking myself is, do I really believe that this step of faith is going to pay off because Jesus is a better rewarder than anyone in this world? But then secondly, and you already talked about this, I think for some people, the heart may not be far off on this. Like people might, that the heart might be sort of there, but just practically, and this amazes me because again, we wouldn't have got by without budgeting, but there are so many people that don't budget. We never would have survived with. I mean, we were budgeting everything that came in because when we were first married, we were living lean. Even now, I mean, we have a very precise budget. Karina does a wonderful job with it. We pray about it. We agree to it together about how we're going to spend our money and where it's going to be allocated. I think for some people, if finances are done in a more haphazard, sort of unplanned way, we do all kinds of things. You typically aren't successful in almost anything without a plan. Like if you're looking to lose 30 pounds, you need a plan.
Yes.
We put out Bible reading plans. We have prayer plans. So the idea of saying, well, I'm going to try to just generally be generous, man, if you're not planning to be generous, mm-hmm. if you're not intentionally, like you said, prioritizing this, it's probably not going to happen. And the sad thing to me about it is that the heart might be there.
Yes.
The heart might not be the obstacle in many ways. It might just be the practical thing of sitting down. And we've got great people in our church that help with this. There are great programs that you can find online, great books that just help you sit down. I know we've been working on some different things with getting some resources here at the church that we can help people with yes. who want to go further in this, because it's a heart issue, but it's also a practical issue where if you're able to align those and say, because of where my heart is, I'm going to prioritize getting organized with this so that I can be more purposeful. Sometimes that's just the next step. So I just want to say to anybody listening who right now is like, well, I guess I just need to like pray more. Maybe that's not actually it. Maybe you need to sit down and work out a plan for this, because maybe your heart already wants to do it, but you just haven't taken the time to make it a priority.
I think of the word plan, scripture. I have a plan to bless you, not to harm you.
Yeah.
And the verse goes on, and I go, Lord, you are. You watch and you see, and you'll take care of this, because he has a plan to just bless you to be a blessing.
Absolutely.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is. And it is it in all the things that we do, it does come back to that question of, are we trusting God? Do we really believe that he's for us? Do we really believe that, as John says in 1 John 5:3, his commandments are not burdensome? They're actually for our good. Yeah. And if we own that, giving becomes just a lot less daunting.
Right. Trust is a real interesting issue in the fear that enters. Your heart and your head get really confused with trust sometimes. You know that he'll come through, but then you have the confusion of, what if he doesn't?
Right.
And so I was rock climbing, and I was on rope, and the gal up on top was only 85 pounds, and she yelled, "En belay," and that means she knows you, and I'm yelling, "Climbing," and my head was saying, I think she can trust, but my heart was all confused, and I'm going to die. And so it's a wonderful issue that you have to fight through, of this head and heart. And Lord, I'm going to lean on you, and you said you would take care of me.
Yeah. And the good news is he weighs a lot more than 80.
Yes.
He is our rock. But yeah, Lauren, that's a great word to kind of conclude on. And I really appreciate your thoughts and joining this. I know it's something that you have a heart for,
yes.
because you want our church family not to miss out on the joy and the impact that comes from
giving. Amen. Amen.
Yeah. So
thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Much appreciated. And thank you for all of you who took the time to watch this or listen to this. This is the fourth week of these four episodes where we've been talking about what it means to belong to a church family. If this is the first one that you've watched or you haven't watched all of them, I really encourage you to watch all of them, because even if you're not a part of LBF Church, this is still something for you to take in for whatever church family that you're a part of, and what it means not just to go to church, a term I don't like using, but to belong to a church. To say, I worship together with these fellow believers. I'm in community with them together. I'm bringing my spiritual gifts to the table as a stewardship, and I'm also bringing my finances and resources to the table as a stewardship. We put out episodes of The Christian Contrast every 2 weeks. So if you've just discovered this and you feel like this was helpful and fruitful in your life, you can look on our YouTube channel for Life Bible Fellowship Church, and also on our website at lbf.church. And you can find all kinds of episodes from a couple of years back that encourage you in your faith as you look to follow Jesus and however he's leading. So until our next episode 2 weeks from now, thanks so much for taking the time to listen.